Welcome to ExecuPeeps, Tina.
Thank you so much, Sasha. It's lovely to be here.
Today, we're celebrating your book, Effective Remote Teams. To begin off, do you have a morning ritual? What is it?
Yeah, great question. You might have heard the saying, win the morning, win the day. And I do believe in that. So morning rituals are important to me. So there are a couple of key elements, but I must say, before the morning starts, there are two things that I do the night before to be ready for the morning ritual. And the first one is making sure I get to bed at a reasonable hour, because sleep is absolutely one of those things that as a high performing leader, you need to be able to operate at your best. So going to bed at a reasonable hour so I can wake up at a reasonable hour is the first thing. But the second thing that I do the night before to help me with my morning ritual is to write out what are the top three things for me to accomplish tomorrow. And by doing it the night before, it gives me that opportunity before the day gets going to really think through what will add the most value for the people that I work with. And so then in the morning, before I open my phone, and before I look at any social media or emails, I have a look and go, what's the number one thing on my list? And that's what I start before I get into the things that are coming at me for the day. The other things are morning coffee is one thing that becomes part of my morning ritual, but usually that is after I've done some form of exercise. So that could be going for a run, which I do a few times a week, or it could be going for a walk or something else, just to get in the right frame of mind for the day. So they're the key things I do most days to be able to really win the morning, win the day.
Tina, what is the best constructive guidance that you received before you dealt with the burnout?
Best constructive advice. Some advice that I was given many years ago from a CEO, a wonderful CEO, David Moffat, which stuck with me, was when you are in a role, think about three things and whether you're doing these three things. Are you adding value? So that's about the outcomes, the results that you're delivering for your organization. The second one being, are you learning? Are you still growing in what you're doing, developing, be it your technical skills or your leadership skills or some other type of skills? And the third thing, are you having fun? Are you working with people who you love working with and you find work something really, really enjoyable? And that all three things are needed to be able to have a fulfilling career. And it's okay if one or even two are out of whack for a little bit of time. But if it's ongoing or if all three are, perhaps consider, is this really what you want to be doing with your career?
I appreciate you sharing the fun part, because it was about a few months ago I attended a workshop, how you integrate play in your day-to-day work. And yes, it is monumental. People stop playing after their teenage years, because as we age, more obligations come into our life.
Absolutely. And I have two kids. So my kids now are 14 and 12. And I've seen that when they would want to play, often my first thought was, well, hang on a second. I would have my serious hat on. And then I realized playing is really fun. Often that spurs innovation. It spurs creativity, as well as just it's really, really enjoyable. So I love that concept that for grown-ups, play is just as important as it is for kids.
What is one thing that would surprise everyone about you?
Oh, great question. One thing that would surprise everyone. I love that one. Let me think. The one thing that would surprise people, I actually am a bit of a homebody. So even though I love speaking, I do a lot of speaking, group coaching, and I'm very active on LinkedIn. And that's the extroverted side of me. There's a side that really loves being home with my husband, James, and my two kids and the four of us just being together. So that's something I think for people who know me quite well, they're quite surprised that I am not out and about more than I am.
Tina, you and I have, well, that's one thing we both have in common. But another thing we have in common is that we both have black belts in Six Sigma. And in your book, you talk about the four burners theory. How are you able to integrate those principles into how you balance your life today?
Yes, so the four burners theory is really around thinking through different areas of your life and how much you turn the heat up in those areas or dial down the heat. So areas such as your career, your family and your friends, and obviously other relationships in there, as well as things such as your health. And so for me, I realized, and some people say to be really, really successful, you need to turn down the heat on some so that you can focus, for example, on your career. And this concept doesn't quite sit well with me because I don't like the idea of having a great career at the expense of my health or the expense of my friends and family. And I realized this the hard way when I actually burnt out when I was in a senior leadership role in corporate. And I realized, well, hang on a second. I still want to have the heat on my career. I want to be able to be really successful and great at what I do. But I also want my health and I want my relationships and the other things that are important in my life. So for me, it was realizing that it's not necessarily only having one burner on, but it's about thinking, well, how can I do things differently? How can I work smarter so that I've still got the four burners that matter to me that they're on, but I'm just doing it in a little bit of a different way than how other people do it. So for example, last week I was looking, I'm a runner, I'm a really mediocre runner, but it's one of the things that I do for my health. And I was looking at my day and trying to think, where am I going to fit my run in for my day? Because early morning wasn't going to work on this particular day. And I realized that for me to fit my run in, it would have to be in the city. So I live in Melbourne, Australia, after seeing a client. And so I turned up to see my client in my running gear. Now, most people would not think of doing that, going, I can't do that. I've got to be professional. And my client, Megan, thought it was fantastic. I turned up and said, you've got me in my running gear. I'm doing a run straight after this because it was the only time I could fit it in with everything going on today. And so it's also about giving ourselves permission to do things a little bit differently from what we've been taught of what a corporate leader looks like over the past few decades.
You brought up running, which I was going to, but you are not a mediocre runner because marathon running requires its own fair share of investment, and you are very modest about it. Regarding the marathon running, is there a winning strategy? What is the mindset when you know you're going on for miles?
Yeah. So I've learned a lot that has helped me in my career by running some marathons. I remember the first marathon I ran was the New York Marathon, and that was back in 2004. And James, my husband, and I, we were living in New York, and I went to this seminar on, it was for people who were interested in running the New York Marathon. And the presenter said, who here has run a marathon before? And very few hands went up. And then they said, who here is a marathoner? And once again, very few hands went up. And then he went on to say, well, you're here because you want to run the New York Marathon. So from a mindset standpoint, start thinking, I am a marathoner. Just because you haven't got to the start line or the finish line yet, as you think about how you train, get in that mindset of this is who you are. And so then my choices were then based on I am a marathoner. So, for example, am I going to get up early to go for a run this morning, knowing that consistency is key to and going through the enough training to be able to make it to the finish line, and thinking I am a marathoner. Yes, I will get up early and I will go for that run. So the first thing that has really helped me is that mindset of who do I want to be? And it's not about having crossed the finish line yet, but stepping into what you aspire to be. I think the second one, which has absolutely helped me throughout my whole career since running the marathons, has been what I call run in the mile. And what I mean by this is a marathon is 26.195 miles, or it's 42.2 kilometers. And that's a really long way. And so if you think about when you go to the start line, I'm going to run 26 miles, that can be really overwhelming. And I remember when I was running the Steamtown Marathon in Scranton, Pennsylvania, I remember I got to about halfway and my mind started thinking, oh boy, I've still got half to go. And I started worrying. And then I thought, hang on a second, run in the mile. Don't think about the fact you've got 13 miles still to go, but just think about this mile and chunk it down. And I think that mentality and that mindset of when you've got something really big that you've got from a work standpoint or a personal standpoint or a marathon standpoint to go, I'm not going to think about the 26 miles. I'm just going to think about this one. I'm going to do the best I can in this mile. And then I'll think about the next mile. And just breaking it down into smaller chunks can really, really help.
Tina, do you have any hidden talents? What are they?
Well, I think I'm really good at karaoke, but my family will tell you otherwise.
When the mind and heart don't agree, what do you do?
Yeah, I've had a few situations throughout my career, and I think most senior leaders have, where somehow something just is jarring. There's friction there and it's not seamless. For me, I step back. So usually I do ask myself those questions. If it's in a work standpoint, I ask myself those questions that I mentioned earlier. Am I adding value or is there friction in there? Am I learning? Am I having fun and working with values? And there have been times where values haven't aligned. And so for me, it's working through, is this important enough to me to step away? Is this something that I can resolve? Or if I look at the situation in its entirety, I think, no, actually, I'm okay here. And so the key thing that I've found is making the time and the space to reflect and not just keep pushing through in anything. But I've learned over particularly the last decade, I've learned that creating space and that time in my calendar for self-reflection is really, really important.
Absolutely. Tina, when you're not working and spending time with your loved ones, sometimes we have to eat. Do you have a favorite comfort food?
Yeah, so not at the moment. And the reason I say that, I'm doing something called 75 hard at the moment. And I talk about it in my book that I did this last year, and I'm doing it again with a group of friends where for 75 days, we are clean eating. We're doing 2 45-minute workouts a day. We're reading 10 pages of nonfiction. We're drinking lots of water. So right now I'm in the middle of that. So there's no comfort foods at all. There's no processed food, no junk food. Outside of the 75 days, we have something in my family that we call Saturday night treats. I'm a big believer in the Pareto principle, 80-20, that we can't and nor should we be good all the time of doing things perfectly. So in my family, during the week, we do eat clean. And then Saturday night, everyone gets a treat, whatever it is. So for me, in Australia, we have Smith's salt and vinegar chips. And so they're crisps and they've got lots of salt, they've got lots of vinegar, and they're delicious. And I have some of them usually on a Saturday night. And by knowing I'm going to have them, that helps me to eat clean most of the other time.
That sounds delicious, but now it also explains your glow. You cross paths with many people from around the world. What is the biggest misconception about you?
That the biggest misconception is that because I'm really friendly, that I can't have the tough conversations. And I've faced into this my whole career where I'm a naturally friendly person. I'm a smiley person. And I've been given the advice throughout the years of I should not smile so much. I shouldn't be so nice. And I'm using that in inverted commas at the moment. And I've always disagreed with that and thought, no, it's okay to be friendly. It's okay to be nice and kind. That doesn't mean that you can't have a really tough conversation when you need to. And my team members who I've worked with over the years would say, gee, I could see you could be quite candid, quite blunt sometimes when there was tough feedback. And I think people mistake that niceness and don't realize that being kind's a great thing, and you can be kind and tough in whatever form it needs to be.
You are a global leader. Can you please finish this sentence? Loyalty is
everything. I believe in being loyal, and everything's a really strong word. That's the one that came out for me. Obviously, I haven't heard this question that you're going to ask it to me. For me, I believe in being kind. I believe in integrity. I believe in having really strong values. I believe I am my word. So what I say, I absolutely want to back it up. And so for me, there have been so many people who have been there through my career. I've been there with them through theirs. And I want to recognize that. And with that, that's what I think about when I think about loyalty.
What is the most fearless thing that you've done in the last 12 months?
Oh, in the last 12 months. Well, it's interesting. We've been in lockdown here in Melbourne, Australia for a long, long time. So the last 12 months has been really challenging. I think probably the most fearless thing that I've done has been being really vocal about that. Particularly LinkedIn is where I post a lot of my videos and a lot of advice and tips to help other corporate leaders. And I've realized that I want to get my message out there to help others. And if it makes me a little bit nervous, that's okay. And so to be fearless and say what I think is going to help corporate leaders around the world, because my view right now is we're at this kind of these crossroads of which way corporations and leaders in particular choose to lead. I'm seeing some leaders who are saying my people need to be back in the office, and I actually think that's quite cowardly. It's not stepping up to being a truly inspirational leader. So for me, being fearless has been talking about openly about the fact that I believe that the leaders in the companies who are forcing their people back into the office 5 days a week, they're going to lose the war for talent. And so it's about, for me, showing leaders there's a different way that employees are screaming out for it. Employees, the data is overwhelming, that people want that flexibility and they realize that they've got to produce. The results, the outcomes have to be there. But they're just saying, well, I can produce those outcomes in a different way than we've done it previously. So I believe I've been quite fearless in speaking my mind, knowing that not everyone is going to agree with what I passionately and deep to my core believe.
As the author of Effective Remote Teams, what was the most vulnerable aspect of writing the book? Because you do share a lot about your personal experience.
Yeah, I do. It's hard writing a book. And when I went to do the final approval, I almost wanted to keep pushing it off, because putting a book out there is quite scary because everyone gets to see what you've written and to judge it. I think the most vulnerable story that I put in there was one that, because it involved a team member of mine, and it's the story of Carlos, for those of you who read the book, when his best friend was kidnapped in Mexico and how, as a leader, I had to face into that. And just knowing that, even now, I feel emotional thinking back to that time. It was such a raw, exhausting time. And as a leader to have to go through that, writing about that story was the one that really, it took a lot for me to go, yep, I'm now comfortable with it. And I think this could help other leaders so that when they have team members come to them with a crisis, if I even get through to one leader to go, put the person first, forget the work for a second, even if, as was in my case, I had something due to the global CFO, think about the person first. And I thought me getting that message out is so much more important if it helps even one leader than my own comfort levels with sharing it.
Speaking of books, is there any book that you are reading not related to your work?
Oh, I'm always reading. Reading, and I'm a bit of a nerd, so it's always nonfiction that I read. So the book that I'm reading at the moment that I'm really, really loving is called Key Person of Influence. And it's all about being a thought leader in whatever space it is. Because as I said about when you asked the question about being fearless, I've realized I've got some messages here that I really want to share with other corporate leaders, because I know it can help them see that they can have a great corporate career and a life outside of work, whatever that is. And I know the impact that it will have on their teams. So thinking through getting my message out there to be able to help others, that's what this book is about. And I'm finding it super, super useful.
I believe that we also have to keep our inner child alive. Tina, do you have a favorite childhood memory?
Oh, I've got lots of them. Let's see. Childhood memory, probably the one that comes to mind is I have an older brother, Tim, who's 2 years older than me, and we're still to this day very, very close. And our next door neighbours, the Andersons, they have had two kids similar age to Tim and me. And we decided that we were both going to construct billy carts and have a billy cart race around the neighbourhood. And so we spent weeks working on our billy cart and then together with the Anderson kids, we mapped out, okay, where are we going to go? Which local street, so that if there are cars, we're not going to run into them, are we going to go? And so then Tim and I made our billy cart, and then I was in the driver's seat and he was pushing me against the Andersons, going all through the streets where we grew up. And it was just fun, as well as it was buildings. I'm a builder. I love building things, and doing that with my brother also, and having that competitive side as well, was absolutely something that I am forever thinking that was such a great thing to do as a kid.
How wonderful to make and share those memories. And as we start to wrap things up, do you have any ritual that you engage in when you close your day, whether it's a bedtime ritual?
Yeah. So a few things. The first is when I charge my phone, it's not in the bedroom. And so I have an alarm clock. Most people say, well, I have my phone in my bedroom because it's my alarm clock. I go, no, simply have an alarm clock. So that's part of it. And then for me, always kiss my husband, James, goodnight. That is my bedtime.
And for those who are listening, what do you do and how can they contact you?
So I work with senior leaders and their leadership teams in large global companies. And what I do is usually through group coaching, and that is with my program Outcomes Over Hours in the Office. So you can achieve extraordinary outcomes without burnout. You can reach me on LinkedIn, Tina Patterson with one T. And if you're interested in my book, you can get a copy at effectiveremoteteams.com.
Thank you, Tina, for joining us on ExecuPeaks.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.